This is Roger Molina here in Dallas talking on Creative Disturbance with Ray Pleasant. Ray, it's exciting to talk to you. We've ruined each other's weekend because we're doing this on a late Saturday morning. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello. I'm a PhD candidate at UT Dallas in the Department of Arts and Humanities.
I guess the thing that's provoked this particular discussion between the two of us is you've been taking my graduate seminar in experimental publishing this semester.
Yes.
And through that, I learned that you knew far more than I did, in particular on the topic of oral histories. So you want to tell us a little bit about your work in oral histories?
Well, I decided to start by speaking with my own father for a class I took with Dr. Clay Reynolds. He gave an introductory course to the graduate program, and it was structured around the 1960s. A lot of the books and poetry that we were reading and films had a biographical subtext or inspiration, and I said, what if I just do a pure biographical project and interview my father, because he was 10 in 1960. And so I did a couple of sessions where I talked to him, and it was really interesting and it was really fun. And I thought about other relatives that died that I didn't get to speak to. I had one last question or one last thought and they were gone. So I said, what if I just keep doing this?
Two areas that I've become really interested in: the different problem in intergenerational communication today. It used to be, but maybe I'm imagining people's lives, that life expectancy used to be much shorter, so it was very unusual to get to the age of 70. And now we're just honoring a colleague who's still active and is 100 in Paris, Frank Popper, an art historian. So life expectancy has changed. And obviously the other thing, especially in a state like Dallas, like Texas, and maybe I'm wrong on the demographics, a minority of the people are actually born here and live within 100 miles of their families. Which obviously 100 years ago when my dad was born in Texas, he was within 100 miles of a lot of relatives. And so this issue of intergenerational communication I've become interested in, because I think we need new ways, and publishing is a big word, but you've just said maybe every family should just have the habit of recording each other so their grandchildren
Absolutely.
Could, you want to expand on that a little bit?
Absolutely. I tried to design the prompt questions or statements in thematic pages. So a page has a particular theme and maybe it's got maybe five or six questions or ideas. And the archive grows as questions grow, and younger people are invited to author their own thematic page, and they can take those with them to speak to their own family and sort of have a framework for how to talk to their family, or they can add them to the growing library of questions. And I think that for my family, a lot of my relatives that are older do live out of state, and people seem to try to maintain their independence for a really, really long time, even when they couldn't or shouldn't. And I think maybe that kind of adds to the way Americans live so far apart, is this need to go out and be independent and stay independent.
Okay, you just triggered the interesting connection between what you were just saying, which is we now have the technology to speak to the dead. My wife, Christine Molina Maxwell, and two of my children, Yuri Molina and Giselle Molina, went to the Holocaust Museum in Chicago. And one of the displays they have is a holographic oral history with a Holocaust survivor. But what they've done is they've taken hours and hours of interviews. And what you can do is, you're 18 and you want to ask a question. You ask a question, and then the system has the dead person give you their answer.
Oh,
so it's like, granddad, where were you born? Reply. Grandmother, what kind of embroidery did you know how to do? she replies. So indeed, your list of questions, mm-hmm. right, might not be questions your grandparents would have thought of,
right?
But as mm-hmm. their grandchild, you would. Mm-hmm. And we now have the technology for someone just to record a whole bunch of answers to questions your grandchildren might have,
oh,
right?
That's really interesting. You know,
which sports were you really good at? And then, you know, the person can reply. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, you know, it's a bit complicated to do now, but maybe in the future.
It's interactive.
Now, obviously, they can't communicate with us. Mm-hmm. Well, they can communicate with us, but we can't communicate with them yet.
Yeah.
And so I think the work you're doing in oral histories is really interesting. Tell us a little bit about who you're talking to in Dallas at the moment.
I'm interested in talking to African Americans who are over the age of 60, people who have a living memory of decades before the 1980s, because that's out of my living memory. I was born in 1985. I think that these are people who lived through some of the most pivotal times in American history, and they have so many anecdotes that speak to bigger policies that we might know about but don't really understand on a personal level. I think individually the interviews are extremely interesting, but also you can mine groups of interviews for data, you know, in terms of specific things. My dad talked about what it was like to integrate schools. He lived through it. And I spoke with Ann Williams, the founder of Dallas Black Dance Theater, and she spoke about integrating schools at the elementary, middle, and high school level, and their stories match, despite the fact that at the time they lived in two different states.
Didn't know each other.
And so I think things like that are really great for mining data about particular things. And when you listen to their stories individually, I think they've got some really special gems. I think the social movements we're going through now pull so much from methods and ideas from the 60s and 70s that really what we're trying to do is a watered-down version of what they invented. And so I think
so that connects to another interesting thing. Poe Johnson, who used to be part of Creative Disturbance, still is actually, came up with this term dark culture, mm-hmm. which is by analogy to astronomy, where it turns out the universe is full of dark matter. It doesn't emit light. Astronomers only know how to look for light. And so there's all kinds of things going on in the universe we don't even know they exist.
Right.
And so that's the analogy with astronomy and dark culture. And so, you know, universities document the work of people in certain kind of ways. There's all kinds of other stuff going on in Dallas that universities have no knowledge of. Right, and so part of what you're doing is bringing to the attention of the world that these people existed.
Right. Yes.
This is what they did.
Right.
No, they didn't do a PhD. They didn't write any books.
Right.
But what they did changed the history of Dallas.
Right. Yeah. I studied art history, and I always say, just because you don't know about something doesn't mean it didn't exist. We study typically the same five European artists all of the time, and just because there are artists that you don't know about or that didn't make it into that particular social group, or doesn't mean that they didn't exist and paint well and do something innovative. So exactly, I'm trying to bring to light people that the larger scheme of history doesn't have an awareness of.
And it may be that they had a bigger role in changing the history of Texas.
Right.
The people acknowledge, mm-hmm. Because they were working in a context mm-hmm. where the institutions weren't paying attention to them, they weren't documenting what they were doing, they weren't looking at, you know, how the things they tried that didn't work,
right.
and so on. When we were preparing this talk, you talked about stalking the Folk Art Museum.
Yes,
so I'm pleased to announce on Creative Disturbance that Ray is a world-famous stalker. So why don't you just explain why you used that phrase and what you did?
I guess that's a strong word to use, but I just frequented the Folk Art Museum. The American Folk Art Museum is an institution in New York, and they have a really great website. It's simple, but it's very well done. And for no reason, I just frequently check it, and I saw an application announcement for a particular fellowship studying Susan Te Kahurangi King's drawings and artwork. And I'm concluding that fellowship this May. But the museum is full of African-American art because for so long, even now, a lot of Black artists were classified as folk artists. They didn't have formal training. And in order to, quote unquote, discover these artists, it was through word of mouth. And in order to document their life and work, it was typically oral histories or documentaries. So I think what I'm doing now is definitely related to folk life and folk art.
Okay,
in
so
terms of art and music and life in
one
black
of the
culture.
Most famous Black American artists mm-hmm. actually wrote an article in Leonardo about 40 years ago.
Wow.
And I'll let you stalk our website to find it. And how that happened is sort of an interesting story in itself. But again, you know, this is really part of, we don't have time to talk about it, but just tell us a little bit more about Susan King.
Susan King is an elderly New Zealand artist who was recently diagnosed with autism. That was the closest cluster of symptoms and behaviors that she exhibited, and she has made up to 7,000 drawings in her lifetime. She did take a brief gap in her 30s, but her family kept her drawings for her entire life, and they're slowly starting to share and sell her work. The Folk Art Museum has a small collection of her work that spans the different stages and phases that she went through as an artist and as a person, and they created a fellowship so that her work could be studied in a concentrated way without interruption or the bother of sales and the art market. So it's been very open-ended and very creative. I've been able to take my own direction with it, and I'm doing things like art practice and using Susan as sort of my guide and my teacher.
Have you met Susan?
I have met Susan.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So our listeners could Google Susan King and Ray Pleasant and might find some of the things you've been doing with her.
In May, the bulk of what I've been working on is going to be presented to the public.
Okay.
So I'll be doing a presentation at the Folk Art Museum in May about it.
So listeners, please look for Ray's presentation at the Folk Art Museum in New York in May.
Yes.
And so thank you so much for ruining your weekend with us and thinking aloud on creative disturbance.
Thank you.